quarantined episode of The Accessible Stall.
What are we going to talk about today, Emily, in this underground bunker that we are both living in?
We can't both be living in it. That's not social distancing.
You're right. This underground bunker that we are separately living in.
Right, exactly. We have a wall between us. It's fine. Also, we are not actually in an underground bunker. That would be cool, though. Okay. Remember last episode when we met with one of the people on the production team for Vote for Access?
Sure do.
We have the star of the show today.
I'm so excited.
We do.
Oh my God. Star, will you please introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm Amani Barberin. It's lovely to be with you today.
Clarification that we are not actually together, though.
We're not. We're alone together.
Exactly. We are social distancing at home, doing this virtually.
Yep.
Don't you all worry about us.
We're fine. We promise. We are social distancing. We are separated, but together and loving one another in harmony.
I mean, we're fine insofar as, like, you can be fine when you're disabled in a pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's valid. I feel that so much.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that is constantly being forgotten at this point in the never-ending, completely dizzying news cycle is the fact that, like it or not, we still have an election coming up soon.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people are already exhausted from it because it started last year, it feels like. And there's been so many ups and downs. People are so just annoyed with talking about it still. But I think it's still really important. It's still very necessary to talk about. And we especially need to be talking about accessibility.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's more crucial than ever right now when there's also health considerations to be taken into account. So, I mean, we still need to be talking about voting accessibility. It's not like it's gone by the wayside in our minds.
Yeah, I think that so many people really want to participate in this election more so than ever. And I think that people are now kind of getting hip to a lot of disability accessibility in different ways from other aspects to pandemics, which can be frustrating. But we really do need to pay attention to the disability community when it comes to elections.
So I am the only one of this group of three who was not actually part of some of the making of Vote for Access. So can you both fill me in? Can you tell me more about it? I know that we got the gist from Alexa last time, but just in case someone is tuning into this episode and not the last one, let's get that summary.
Sure. So Vote for Access is a 5-part digital series talking about different aspects that disenfranchise disabled voters. So anything from stereotypes to informational access to proximity to the polls. We go over a lot of different topics and talk to so many different people about their experiences voting and advocating for voting in this series. And we just really wanted to make people aware of all the barriers to voting that disabled people experience just to feel like they're a participant in society. So the series launched last week, and we are promoting episode 2 right now. But you can watch every single episode on YouTube, online, or on voteforaccess.us.
Wow, I feel like you definitely practiced that.
I need to take a breath.
Yeah, let's do some breathing exercises now. Deep breath in. Deep breath out. Okay. Since I'm 100% sure you said that all in one breath, but
yeah.
Anyway, here's a question for you. Are these new conversations, or are these conversations that people have been having and we're all aggregating these conversations right now? Maybe that's a silly question, but sometimes I feel like it's news to people, especially non-disabled people, that voting access has been an issue for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's news to non-disabled people, like so many aspects of accessibility that they are now aware of. So disabled people have been having this conversation for decades. And with every election, there's this conversation around voting and accessibility. And I think that the goal of this series isn't just to valorize disabled voters, to get disabled people to vote more, but it's also really to get non-disabled people to confront their privilege when it comes to voting and why disabled people feel so disenfranchised and left out of voting conversations. And I think that we really need allies to force their politicians to make voting accessible.
What does that look like? How can we advocate for voting accessibility? And you can tell me if this is covered in the series, because I have not seen all of them yet.
So when we talk about getting people to contact their congresspeople, contact their election boards, that's really what we want. We want people to start paying attention to the issues and the barriers. We want people to get better training on accessible voting units, better training on the ways in which disability infringes upon people's rights to vote, and the ways in which attitudes really kind of inform the way disabled people interact with their public figures. And I think that non-disabled people really need to start tuning into the conversations that disabled people are having, because we can't have them alone. We have been, unfortunately, but it really needs to be a group effort on everybody's part. So I think that when we talk about people contacting their elected officials, they should really be asking, what are you doing to involve disabled people in the voting process? What are you doing to ingratiate yourself to disabled voters? And how can you make it a little bit easier for everybody to be a participant in society?
And now that Imani has just given you the script that you can use for your phone call or email.
Email's better. Phone, it's hard to sanitize a phone, but
That's very true. And also, I hear that voicemails have become especially overwhelming right now. Not that they aren't always, but...
Yeah, my inbox is, I think that any sort of inbox right now is just overwhelming. Because you're just looking at it like, why are you trying to talk to me? I promise I'm not doing anything bad.
I have a Pavlovian response to the sounds that my inbox makes at this point.
Oh, see, mine is the Slack noise.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah.
That one makes the hairs in the back of my neck stand up. It's just not good.
For me, it's the email notification, the ding, and you're like, no.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not stress ourselves out. We're already stressed about voting access here, people.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. Thank you for bringing us back, Emily. I really appreciate your...
You're right. I'm just here to bring it back around.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So tell us about you. I mean, we've had you on the show before, and we called you the hashtag queen. And as far as we know, you still are very much the hashtag queen. But you didn't just take your throne, did you? I mean, how did you get started in social media advocacy? Because how I found out about you is one day Emily was just like, oh my God, you have to follow this really cool person I just met. Which, to be fair, is how I meet everybody in the disability community. But she seemed particularly jazzed about you. And when I started working with Block by Block, I probably sounded like that to Jordan when he told me that you were being the host of the new series that didn't yet have a name. But yes, tell us about how you got started with your online activism in the disability world.
Oh, and bonus points for connecting it back to Vote for Access.
Yeah. Ooh. Ooh.
Do you like a challenge?
Yeah, I like it. I like a challenge. And you know what? I already have the connections. I can make it come full circle. Okay.
I'm ready.
Here's the story. So around 2014, I started my blog, crutchesandspice.com, and I really wanted to have more of a dialogue with other disabled people, particularly disabled Black people. And I felt like the only people who were really reading my blog was my mom, and she was skipping several posts.
Relatable.
So I started to use my Twitter profile a little bit more. I had had it since 2009, but really wasn't tweeting anything of substance. And then I started connecting to Crip the Vote. A friend of mine had forwarded me a Crip the Vote conversation. And I started engaging with people who were writing about voting and writing about disability. about 2 years after I had started my blog. And then I started getting involved with a lot more political advocacy and disability advocacy. But really, it was about me connecting it to a personal story and personal narrative about disability and how it affects people of color and disabled people of color, Black people in particular. And so it really has come full circle, because once I started writing about Crip the Vote and politics and things like that, I started being geared in that arena and participating in those conversations. And so I always really liked the idea of a conversation having a bookmark, so that people can refer back to it and have it referenced. And that's essentially what a hashtag is. It's a bookmark on a conversation that anybody can revisit and talk about and engage with. So I loved using hashtags in a way that would show the volume of these disability conversations and show that people weren't alone. And so that's why I really like hashtags in social media, because you get to be surrounded by people who otherwise people would ignore. But because we are all coming together for this one purpose or for this one hashtag, it makes it feel like you're invincible, because there's people around you who have your back sometimes.
I love that, because a lot of disability activism can be isolating, and a lot of our experiences with inaccessibility and voter disenfranchisement can also be really isolating, because a lot of times it's happening not on this scale that seems to us to be incredibly broad, but it's really this very localized, in your town, in your community, yeah, issue. And so I know that for me, you know, when I go into my polling place, it's this teeny tiny little part of my town. It's a school in my town, you know, so it's a local issue. My mom and I are the only two people in wheelchairs in there at the time that we're voting. You know, nobody else is thinking about my particular access needs. And I think it just feels frustrating sometimes, because you're not in a big group of powerful people in that moment.
Yeah, and you feel so alone. And I think one of the things about disability experiences prior to social media is that we accepted a lot of things as normal that weren't. And that we didn't necessarily excuse it, but we just wanted to get on with our day, right? Like, you're just like, oh, the machine's not set up to vote. You know, they haven't been trained on getting everything together for me. This is just how it is. This is how it's always going to be. But when you really are surrounded by a group of people who have a lot of the same experiences, you realize that's not the way it has to be at all. In fact, we can work together to change it. So that's kind of what the purpose of the series is that we're having these conversations in the aim of changing the way we think about voting and thinking about forming communities around election access and accessibility.
So I feel like, especially right now in the middle of a pandemic, talking about access issues can be an especially emotionally difficult conversation. So can we take an interlude and you tell us something particularly fun about shooting the series? Because I feel like we just need to make sure that people aren't feeling too down right now, even though voting accessibility is such a hugely important issue.
Oh, yeah. I had so much fun shooting the series. I think, like, I worked with an amazing team. Jordan, Alexa, Rachel, everybody on the team was amazing. And they were so fun to be around. That was kind of the best part. Basically, Rachel was like throwing snacks at me between takes the whole time, which was great.
She is the person in charge of a lot of office snacks, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and like there's this bun place in Seattle that I'm like obsessed with now, that I've been looking to find out how to make cubao buns, like stuffed pork rolls. But anyways. And then the sheer amount of makeup I was wearing to me was ridiculous. And every time I go to the bathroom, they would warn me, like, don't look in the mirror. I was like, why? They're like, don't look. It's not great for your mental health. I was like, but I want to look in the mirror because I want to see what my makeup looks like. I looked like I was haunting myself. Fluorescent lighting is not nice to anybody.
No,
if you're wearing Right? Particularly if you're wearing a face that you don't quite recognize on a daily basis. So that was always funny. And then Alexa would be behind the camera, and she would, like, we'd repeat lines so much that I would just start getting what I call an Imani face, which was like me just sarcastic, but with my eyes only. And I would give her so much side eye, like, behind the camera. Like, she'd be like, no, you have to do that again because you look angry. But yeah,
I should warn you of something, because I too have been filmed by Jordan, who is now part of Block by Block, and then he proceeded to take every blooper and turn it into a Giving Tuesday video. So,
but it worked though.
I love it so much. I feel like Alexa wouldn't do that to me. I feel like I've ingratiated myself enough to her that she wouldn't use my side eye as a Giving Tuesday video. But you never know. I mean,
with him, you never know.
Yeah, like I did give her a lot of side eye, but I think I bought her a drink at one point, so I feel like I made up for it.
That counts.
It's totally fine. I have it on really good authority that everybody loves working with you.
Aw, thank you.
Also, I love you, so it's just great. Everybody loves everybody right now.
I love you all.
Yes, this is a mutual love fest. This is something that we also asked Alexa, but I'm going to ask you too, just to see if you guys have different answers. So I know the two of you worked on everything from the inception to the writing, but how did you, or the pair of you, I suppose, land on the episodes that you did? Like, how did you distill those five issues and say, okay, these are the ones that we need to talk about the most, when there are so, so many to talk about when it comes to accessibility and voting?
I think we just kind of brainstormed, like, all together. It was a blur because we were working, like, together for 5 or 6 hours at a time. But I do remember us kind of listing some of the barriers to voting and then kind of sorting them into different categories. And initially, I think there were, like, a couple more categories beyond that, or there were different names for things. But that's kind of how we distilled them down, was we kind of categorized, like, the different aspects and different barriers to voting, and then sorted them into episodes and then kind of tackled it from there. Because we, you know, disenfranchisement comes in a lot of different forms. And so we wanted to tackle as many different topics as possible without erasing any experiences. And both Alexa and I are very cognizant of intersectional identities and working with different groups and different populations. So it was really important to us that we address as many as we could in the series. But yeah, Alexa, I think Alexa has a lot of patience working with me for this long.
So you brought up a really good point about covering different types of voting access, because I think that people might have a relatively narrow view of what defines voting access, just because we're sort of socialized to, if we even think about disability at all, to really only think about the physical manifestations of disability. And so, you know, someone might think about wheelchair access for a voting machine, or maybe somebody might think about voting if you are visually impaired or blind. But there are other issues with voting that are applicable to people with, let's say, intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so we need to be mindful of the fact that voting access encompasses so much more than just sort of, is there a voting machine that's at wheelchair height or that will read options to you?
People have a very narrow view of what disability is, looks like, sounds like, everything. And I think that you see a lot of that on social media whenever, you know, a blind person posts a picture of them using their phone, or whenever a wheelchair user stands up, people think, oh, they're faking it, they don't need it. And people don't usually get the resources they need once that starts to happen. But I think we need to think about disability holistically, both in voting and outside of voting. Andrew Pulrang wrote an article recently saying that there's no list of disabilities under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that's by design, because there are so many disabilities that would be counted out or ignored. And so we need to think about accessibility as so much more than just what we are conditioned to believe it is. People with sensory disabilities have access needs like people with wheelchair users. It's different, but it's still a need that they have. And so when people think of accessibility, we too often think about proximity instead of it's sensory, it's intellectual, it's developmental. There's so many different disabilities that need help and access to their rights, because this is a right for everybody, that we don't really often talk about those issues.
It's something that I think about a lot, the fact that we are advocating for voting access when some non-disabled people are so quick to infantilize us and think that we are not somehow allowed our rights. And so it's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah, one of the women on the series actually said that she's a voting advocate, and she said people that she works with thought that they couldn't vote because they were disabled. Like, what? Who told them that? And why do we let this stereotype exist other than to disenfranchise people?
Or worse, it's not even that someone has told them that, but that it's been implied and internalized.
Yep. In fact, Emily, if you want a really, really awesome 5-minute lesson on that exact thing, might I point you to episode one of Vote for Access?
In episode one, we talk about attitudes and the many aspects of disability in voting that keep disabled people from the polls. On this episode, no, thank
you. That was really good.
Way to bring it full circle.
Thank you so much, Tom.
You're both so good at your jobs.
We try.
So, okay, I know at the time of recording this, we're only episodes in.
Yes, technically we are 2 episodes in the production, in the promotion of it, but all episodes are on voteforaccess.us.
So if you feel like binge watching Imani's face,
I'm sorry, I forget that I'm not on camera. I just did like a voguing face.
Hey, look, now you just made it accessible for everyone.
Aww,
because you already spent it. I would recommend binge watching. I personally have been following along with the broader public releases, but I will now be spending the rest of my night binging and not doing work like I'm supposed to.
Well, thank you for binge watching it. I refuse to binge watch it because I can't look at myself that often or hear my voice that often.
You know, that's real. I don't really like listening back to the podcast.
I do not either. I hate the sound of my own voice.
Pathetic, right? Like, it's so jarring.
Yep.
But if you're using the very jarring voice that you supposedly have, which I disagree, to spread a good message, then it's worth listening to.
I do hope so, because I think that I really want to see disabled people voting so much more. And now that because of the pandemic, people are talking a lot about mail-in ballots, which are more accessible to some people with disabilities, but not others, for issues like sightedness, and people with intellectual disabilities or developmental disabilities may not have the ability to read the ballot as easily as anybody else. But I think that hopefully we'll be moving in the right direction and getting people to their ballots a lot easier.
Yeah, and honestly, conflicting access needs is a really vital point.
Yep. Is there anything that you learned that you didn't know about when it comes to access issues in voting?
Yeah, I learned a little bit about, when we were writing the series, we did a little bit of research on voting on reservations and voting in having mailing addresses and the different ways that the government disenfranchises Native voters. And that was really disheartening. But some of the solutions that they came up with were these like mobile voting centers where they would set up a voting center on a truck or wherever they could put it. They would have it so that people had access to a voting center. And that was really cool to learn about. Another thing that we talked about that was extremely important to me as a disabled Black person, because I'm Black with a capital B, is voter disenfranchisement in the Georgia election, I believe in 2018, that used the ADA to pit it against voters of color, and specifically Black voters who would have voted for Stacey Abrams. And that was extremely, extremely disheartening, because disabled people are not at odds with Black people or brown people. And so we did a little bit of research about that, but I don't think all of that made it to the series, unfortunately. But I think that it's important to point out, especially as we enter into a very interesting election coming up.
Yeah, I mean, identities are not mutually exclusive at all. And so I think that it's really important that you brought that up. We talked about it a little bit on our episode with Alexa as well, just acknowledging the fact that sometimes people will invoke disability rights as some kind of cover up for the fact that they're disenfranchising another population entirely. And so it's sort of this catch 22 that they invent where they're saying, oh, well, don't you want disability rights? Oh, well, we're trying to give them to you. But
yeah,
they're really not. And so no. I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah, and it makes, I mean, from the perspective of somebody who's, you know, part of both communities, it basically pits one another against each other. And people seem to think that the ADA is the problem when the disenfranchisement is the problem. And that's something that we need to address as a community, both in the Black and disabled communities, and listening to people that intersect in both of those identities.
Yeah, and that's why I'm particularly glad that there was representation of multiple marginalized identities in the series, because this is, the disability community is not a monolith, and there's a lot of different perspectives that need to be taken into account to really wrap your mind around voter and accessibility and disenfranchisement as a whole.
And I was honored to be, you know, the host of this series, and representing my communities as best as I can. That's a huge honor to me. And I was very excited to be a part of this project. I talked about it nonstop with family. They were like, please shut up. We are very bored. We are bored of you. Thank you for your time. We would like to go back to watching Umbrella Academy.
I'm not going to lie to you. I get that sometimes. Like, oh, I'm working on this thing related to ableism and inaccessibility and disability. And my family's like, oh, okay.
Again?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I've had arguments at the dinner table with my family over disability rights. And my family's like, can we change the topic? At any point, we can change the topic.
My God. Honestly, same. I mean, it's a little different in that sometimes it's my mom and I, and we're sort of arguing with my dad because it's sort of that disabled, non-disabled binary that's, you know, that comes out. But sometimes you have to get into it with the people that you care about in order to make a little change. And honestly, sometimes you have to get into it with people who are not that close to you, but
I've been called rude for a disabled person many a time, so I wear that. I really do. It is. I changed it like a month ago because somebody else said it to me. I've heard it multiple times.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Also, you're nice to the right people.
Yeah, I feel like there's like this very big dichotomy to me where I'm like, I don't give a crap about some people that are just like trolling me, and then with the people I really care about, I'm like, I love you so much. You're a beautiful butterfly, angel face.
It's true. Amani's actually very affectionate. So anyone who thinks that she's rude for a disabled person, it's probably a you problem.
Well, thank you so much. I'm tender.
We need a little weirdness to break this up. It's good. Weird is good. Are there any other things that we've not talked about regarding Vote for Access that really stand out to you that you want people to know? Like, here's one. If people took away only one thing from the series, what would it be?
One thing, Emily? Come on. I can't pick just one thing.
What do you want to be the one thing that people take away from it? And that's different than what they might actually take away.
Okay,
but
I think
it's a harder question.
That's
not fair.
That's like me getting every single episode. And then thinking of the most important thing that they should take away. And
I'm sorry, I'm a horrible person.
Okay, I have two.
The TLDR.
Okay, I have two. Would that be okay?
Fine. Of course.
Okay. So I think the first one that I want people to take away is that the disability community is incredibly diverse. And so there's no one-size-fits-all solution to voting. I think that voting has to be accessible to everybody, and that takes a lot of different solutions and a lot of different minds coming together to create them. So I don't want people to walk away thinking that there's only one way to address this issue. I think that they need to be thinking about the community as a whole and be thinking about the diversity of the community and the ways in which these different aspects to voting disenfranchise disabled voters. So that's the first thing. The next thing I think I want people to take away with is just the perseverance that disabled have to show up for the society in which we live. Every single person that we talk to, they never questioned whether or not it was important for them to vote. They want to vote because they think that they know that their voice matters. And I know that their voice matters. And just talking with people like Eric Patrick, he tried to vote for 20 years and was unsuccessful. 20 years. I said this in a prior interview. After 5 years, I would have given up. Right? Like, I would have been like,
yeah.
You haven't set it up again? Okay, next time. Okay, I'm done. And the fact that he just kept at it and at it and at it, made sure that people listened to him, that's incredible. And that's the spirit of the disability community. We want to be a part of the society. We have every right to be. And anybody that tries to doubt that or take it away from us is not for us. And I think that that's what I want people to take away. I want you to learn from the disability community, but I also want you to respect us. I want you to respect what we need for our lives, the things that we want to say and the things that we care about. Because we are your neighbors, we're your friends, we're your family members, and we have every right to be able to help choose who leads our country, who write our laws, and who enshrine our value on society. Because we enshrine our value on society, you just have to sit back and recognize it.
Mic drop?
Yeah, we don't even need to do final takeaways.
I mean, I'm done. Good night, everybody. I think all of the takeaways that you gave are so important, and I knew that you would not be able to have just one, and both of what you mentioned hold very much equal weight in my mind for things that people should take away from the series. And I suppose my takeaway as disabled person and as observer of the series is that my hope is that one day the series becomes completely irrelevant because we'll no longer have to persevere for 20 years to exercise something that's a guaranteed right.
That's the hope. I hope it's just a time capsule piece where I'm like, I did this thing this one time about voting, but all of these things are outdated now, so you don't have to watch it anymore.
That's the dream. That's what I would love to see. And I think this is yet another push in the right direction. I also wish it didn't have to exist in the first place, but that's not where we are. So that being said, I'm glad that we have people like you and people who did the work at Rooted in Rights and Block by Block. I know this sounds like an infomercial, but I swear it's because I actually like the people to put together something that needs to be talked about.
And can I just say something? The teams at Block by Block and Rooted in Rights are incredible people and incredible activists in their own right. And they work extremely hard. And so anytime you see our videos, please thank them because they really put a lot of work into it. And they really put their entire hearts and souls into it. And a lot of times when you're in the production part of these types of things, you don't really get to hear that because you're not necessarily the face of it. But they are an incredible team of people. And I had every pleasure of working with them. And I want to work with them again eventually. So please, whenever you get the chance, thank them because they are amazing, amazing people.
I am going to take that one back to the team. And I think Kyle will take that back to his team.
Definitely, definitely.
So do we have more general final takeaways? Like, where can people find you on social media? And can you tell us again where we can find Vote for Access? And are you working on any cool things that we should be aware of right now?
I mean, staying alive is my main project right now.
Excellent.
Yeah, right?
That's a good one.
I think that, So my social media, you can find me on Twitter at Imani _Barberin. I am on Facebook at Crutches and Spice by Imani Barberin. I am also on Instagram at crutches_and_spice. I also work for Disability Rights Pennsylvania at disabilityrightspa.org. I'm the communications director there. In terms of what I'm working on, nothing much, but you can find the series at voteforaccess.us, and you can watch all 5 episodes there. Please share the videos. They're extremely important. I loved working on them, and I would appreciate some of that love. Thank you.
And I'd also like to say that the series is, we tried very hard to make it accessible. There are subtitles in both English and Spanish. There is audio description. There is ASL, and there are transcripts available in English and Spanish as well. So we tried very hard to make all the videos as accessible as possible. Yeah, Rudy
Writes and Block by Block, like, they set the tone. Like, this is not aspirational accessibility. This is what everybody should be doing.
I mean, in my dream world, everything would just be that accessible from the outset, but I think it's important to lead by example in this.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that we're getting a little bit better as a society with accessibility, but like the series says, we have a long way to go.
We do have a long way to go, but you know, I feel like people right now also need to hear again that what they're doing is vitally important. When it feels like it's futile, your speaking up is making a difference. You might not feel it right now. I know that sounds like I'm just being a cheesy motivational speaker, but if you don't speak up, the change isn't going to happen. And, you know, it's not on us to do that work. We shouldn't have to. But know that you've got a team of people behind you and the three of us, at least, who are in that Absolutely. Work for the long haul. Was that way too
motivational? No, it was really good. It didn't, you know, is totally on brand. I wasn't on brand. Sorry. I mean, it's a good take. It's a good shift from you almost cussing out somebody who tried to get you to race them. But I really appreciated the tone.
You know, I contain multitudes.
You really are.
So I think on that note, this has been another, and may I say, fun episode of Be Accessible Stall. Thank you for joining us, Imani.
Thank you so much.
We love a good double guest. Everybody go check out her other episode on being the hashtag queen. We'll link it in the show notes. Aww. It's really fun.
Thank you. We do have a lot of fun together. I will say that much.
Very, very true. And maybe one day in like 2028, we'll have fun in person.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm the one who was like, I'm going to motivate everyone. And then I'm going to bring them right back down.
This has been an emotional roller coaster, Emily.
Well, I'm going to let Kyle wrap it up so that, like, everyone can hear his nice, smooth radio voice going out.
Well. no, Imani has been wonderful, and I always have fun with you, Emily, inside this cramped little bathroom stall we call a podcast. And who knows, in 2028, when we can all hang out, we should just do that.
Great, I'm putting it on my calendar.
Will our calendars be relevant by then? We shall see.
Oh, gosh. We love you all, and might we say, you look good today. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.